This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, The Anatomy of Sadness. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. You're at the gym, you've been working out really hard, and then you go in for the kill. One final push.
This is like the end of my workout. I'm gonna do a set of curls, as many as I can. Usually I'll get up to like 13.
This is Pulse reporter Jad Slayman. He is one of those people who actually looks forward to going to the gym.
The whole point is to run out of steam, to completely exhaust yourself.
But all I got. Done.
And at this point in his workout, Jad is sometimes overcome with a strong emotion.
It's like this weird sadness. It just kind of comes out of nowhere, and then it's gone.
And Jad, what happens when you feel this? Do you start crying?
No, I mean, that would be really embarrassing. But I do notice it, and I've just kind of wondered where it comes from.
So we asked Jad to look into this further. What's happening there?
So I Googled, you know, sad at gym out of nowhere. And turns out, yeah, it's a thing. I talked to Lisa Barrett. She's a psychologist and author of How Emotions Are Made.
Well, I can tell you what it feels like from a lay person's view. Like if I take my science hat off.
She also happens to work out a lot. Her science hat is off for the moment.
Usually I'm aiming for an hour, 30 minutes of intensive exercise a day.
She does sprints and yoga, strength training. Recently, she tried this boxing CrossFit thing, and she's felt this gym sadness too.
Usually as I'm breathing myself back into a calmer state, I feel just a surge of sentiment. I feel a very powerful wave of feeling. Sometimes it feels like sadness. Sometimes it feels like gratitude or awe. Like it just rolls over me. And I do actually, I don't gush tears, but I do sometimes feel a little teary.
Her science hat is back on, and she says this weird emotion at the wrong time actually challenges older ideas about how emotion works. The classic view, she says, is we're all born with these circuits.
One for sadness, one for anger, one for fear, and so on.
So I see a snake or something, and my scared circuit lights up, and I feel scared. The body is supposed to respond whenever these circuits are tripped.
So for fear, it might be that your heart rate goes up, your heart starts to race. And for anger, it might be that your blood pressure goes up.
But she says research doesn't seem to back up this classical view. For one, these body changes seem pretty inconsistent. And if there are particular brain circuits for sad or lonely or angry, she says we haven't found them. It's more complicated than switching the sad circuit or the happy one. Lisa tells me to start by imagining my brain is in a box.
That's dark and silent, which is called your skull. It receives sensory changes from the world through your eyes and your ears and your nose. And it also receives sensory changes from your body. And it has to figure out what those changes mean. It has to figure out what those sensations were caused by.
She says we all have these four most basic types of sensations.
Feeling worked up, feeling calm, feeling pleasant, feeling unpleasant.
Unless you're some kind of Zen master, these feelings are basically always there.
What emotions are the brain's attempt to make sense of what the bodily sensations mean in a particular circumstance, in a particular situation, based on past experience, based on memory, using memory.
Your brain has to take memory, basically your experience, merge it with sensation, and use that to figure out what emotion to conjure. Take a single unpleasant sensation, for example. It can mean a bunch of different things.
So exactly the same ache in your stomach can be hunger, it can be anxiety, it can be longing, it can be disgust.
It's vague. So Lisa says the brain constructs emotion to kind of fill in the blanks, help you figure out what to do in response. Do you respond to that ache in your stomach by making a sandwich, or do you text your ex? And Lisa says all this happens predictively.
Your brain is always working predictively. It's trying to anticipate what's going to happen next so that it can prepare you to meet those needs before they arise.
So maybe at the gym on these last sets, I've got music going. All my brain can tell from its dark little lockbox is most of my body hurts for some reason, and I'd rather it didn't. My brain has to make a snap decision. Is he sad right now? Is that what's going on? And things actually get more complicated when you drill down further. When you start talking neurotransmitters, they're the body's chemical messengers, things like serotonin, dopamine, adrenaline.
The role of neurotransmitters is really complex.
That's Laura Boxley. I asked her about these gym feelings as well. She's a neuropsychologist at The Ohio State University.
And they're often kind of stepping on each other's toes. Dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine playing important roles in mood, but then also in exercise, and then also in addiction or fight or flight. I mean, there's all these different actions where you can see different elements of neurotransmitters involved, sometimes together, sometimes on a spectrum.
For example, dopamine shows up in all kinds of places.
Dopamine plays a role in nausea, in mood, in psychosis, in lactation, in Parkinson's disease, in addiction. There are many common neurotransmitters that wear lots and lots of hats. The roles of neurotransmitters can also overlap.
Using a very limited set of neurotransmitters, the brain has to create the full spectrum of human experience.
It's more like a piano chord or some kind of dynamic where you have things that are feeding into each other into feedback loops over and over again across time.
So, like notes on a piano, musical chords. That is C major. It's a happy sounding chord made of these three notes, C, E, and G. So let's take those same first two notes, C and E, but let's play them together with an A instead of that G. Now you get A minor, a kind of melancholy chord. Most of the ingredients are the same, but it sounds completely different in terms of mood. And again, in your brain, all this is happening constantly, literally every conscious second, and using way more notes than a piano could produce.
And so it can be very challenging to say exactly what's causing what. But in reality, all these things are having this kind of mutual communication back and forth. It's not one direction, it's constant, and it's complex.
So if emotion is this imperfect thing, and if it's something we create instead of something that kind of happens to us, a circuit that gets tripped, what can we do with that?
I'm not saying you can just snap your fingers and then do a couple of, you know, Jedi mind tricks and then completely revolutionize your emotional life. That's just, you know, that would be awesome if that were true, but it's not really true.
That's Lisa again, the psychologist who exercises a lot.
And in fact, trying to change how your brain makes meaning in the moment is actually really hard.
Hard, but she says it's not impossible. There are whole therapies built around recognizing where your emotions come from, what thoughts precede what feelings, and how to take control of that. And a lot of meditative practices are built around this type of mindfulness. Laura, the Ohio State neuropsychologist, understands emotions better than most of us, but yeah, she still struggles with hers.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't have perfect control. Everybody's human.
But she says recognizing that emotions are imperfect, that they're not all powerful, that's useful.
We can kind of make a decision about, is this benefiting me or is this something that I'm terrorizing myself with? Is there another choice here?
So I guess next time I feel a weird sadness in the weight room, I can just recognize my brain makes mistakes here and there. And I'm probably getting a pretty good pump right now. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.